Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center. In the studio today, sitting in for Senator Jim DeBacus, is Emily Hayes, the Salt Lake County Democratic Party first vice chair. That's a long title, Emily.
It is, and hopefully I'll live up to it. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, great to have you on. And on the right, sitting in for Representative Dan McKay, is Holly Richardson, who is a Salt Lake Tribune columnist and a former state representative and very well known in the community. Holly, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We've had you on the show many times. Always hear really positive comments. I want to start with the Supreme Court, the new pick, this Brett Kavanaugh, Coach K, as he said in his speech, if any of you caught that. I was making dinner when President Trump made this announcement, and I knew it was coming. I was happy that I was in a place where I could watch it, so I turned on the TV set, and wow, there's a lot of pageantry that comes with a Supreme Court announcement like that.
It really was. I mean, it was like Miss America, but... For a man.
Yeah, a little bit.
Minus the swimsuit competition.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what I was thinking is this guy, I mean, it's one of the best days in his life. He just won the lottery. And I don't know how the two of you, want to react to it, but I will tell you that I listened to his speech as he was announced, and it was impressive. It really was. He had all the right things to say. He had clerked for Kennedy. Mm-hmm. He had been an appointee under President Bush. Mm-hmm. He called out, Ronald Reagan. He talked about his kids and being a basketball coach. That's where the Coach K mm-hmm. comes from, alluding to, the coach of Duke. Anyway, he was the consummate scholar, family man, and I'm just going to say pretty good politician. So did either of you hear the speech?
I did. I was also making dinner when the announcement came, and so I went screaming back into the bedroom and tell my husband who the choice was. But I think that it's a choice that on the left, I think it's one that we're not surprised with. Mm-hmm. He's, like you said, he's got all the bona fides that we were expecting, someone who's been on the bench for a while, someone who has clerked for the right people. I think a little bit surprising was someone who is more of a kind of Republican operative. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think was a little surprising and something that might be a challenge for him in his confirmation process. I don't know if you saw today, but apparently Rod Rosenstein has requested the assistance of, I think he said, 100 full-time lawyers in the process of vetting him in
all
his,
these documents
of all the documents because there are so many things that he's written and produced either while he was a lawyer or while he was working in the Bush White House or as a judge. And so I think that could be really interesting to see how that plays out. And I know that was a concern of Mitch McConnell's as well, was, is there something in his history that's going to be kind of a snag? But I think in the end he's going to get confirmed. I mean, mm-hmm. I know the Democrats are going to fight him. We have to fight this appointment. And I think that's kind of the new standard in our judicial appointments.
Sure.
And so I think it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out.
Holly, how do you see this? Did you like the pick?
Yeah, I think he's fine. Again, also not very surprised. I mean, he's not even necessarily a bold pick for President Trump, but I don't think he's going to have really any significant difficulty in getting confirmed. And to your point, actually, I do think that it's become the new standard to oppose, just blanket oppose whoever it is that's not on your team. And I think that's a shame. I think that I would like to see that we're a little better than that, right? Mm-hmm. That we're able to look at people on their merits and be able to judge whether they would look at the Constitution and be able to apply it appropriately as a judge. But we've moved past that, it seems. And the Republicans did it to Obama's appointee or nominee, and now the Democrats are doing it to President Trump. It's just that the Republicans control the House and the Senate, and I don't think he'll have any trouble getting through the Senate.
I want to just look at two local connections here. One is that we had two Utahns on the list. I think it was the list of 10 or 12, but it was the Lee brothers, mm-hmm. Mike and Tom Lee. That would have really, shooken things up had Senator Lee been chosen. But I guess obviously he wasn't. But he did get a call from the president letting him know his choice. It's kind of nice to be that close to it.
I don't know. I mean, I think it was a little weird for me. I mean, I don't know. Is that normal to call and say, hey, I did not choose you? I guess in today's reality show, right? He didn't get the rose. But
And Holly, I learned that in the governor's office, it is a good thing to do because they really appreciate it. And then they're able to say it. And it shows that you cared enough. It's kind of like, I remember, if you veto a bill, you always call the sponsor first.
Yeah, and tell him, and so you're not blindsided.
Yeah, but
if he had read the news at all, he knew he wasn't in the running any longer. But, who knows? I mean, I guess that's
just
a nice
gesture. I guess it's nice to get a call from the President of the United States.
I did not choose you.
I think the surprising thing for me was the President doesn't exactly have a track record of doing these kind of outreach. Right. I mean, wasn't it Rex Tillerson found out from a text or from a tweet that he lost his job? So, I think for me, it's not really surprising from like a political standpoint, but just from the standpoint of
this president.
This president, exactly.
One other local connection, Senator Hatch. I saw that right after the pick, they had him, you know, ready to talk about it. But he had been a part of the confirmation hearings and voted on every one of the sitting Supreme Court justices.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
It's pretty
incredible.
He's been
there a while.
Yeah, it says something.
I think I saw he's been a part of 15 confirmation processes, I think, in his time. Like, that's it's impressive.
So just a few more months for him. Hey, let's do let's stay in Washington, only let's go across the pond, the Atlantic Ocean, and go over to NATO. I know that you're following this very closely, Emily. Set this up for us. So you've got, I mean, for me, it's just this really strange thing going on here where we have our sitting president taking on our allies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been pretty bizarre. You know, I'm a bit of a student of international politics. And so watching what happened at the G7 and then now what's happening at NATO, where Trump showed up and, you know, is saying you need to be contributing more, you need to be doing this and that. And these things aren't happening behind closed doors. He's not having personal conversations. He's declaring these things in a tweet or just, you know, kind of decrying them to people and saying this is what needs to happen. And, you know, what's really interesting is they've made agreements to increase, you know, their GDP spending, these other NATO countries, and I believe the deadline's 2024.
Mm-hmm. And isn't it like a 4% rule or something?
So he's proposed
4%.
Yeah, they've agreed to a 2% increase to 2% by 2024.
And this is how much they give to the alliance
exactly.
to protect the peace. Yeah.
And the interesting thing is the United States spends a lot more of its GDP on defense than these other countries do to begin with. And so asking them to make this increase, I think, was a pretty big step to begin with in 2014 when they made this initial agreement. And so now, about 6 years out from where they are actually supposed to get to this, now he's all of a sudden saying, you need to double this, and you need to kind of kowtow to my trade agreements, and you need to be respecting Russia. There's just a lot on the table. And I don't envy like Angela Merkel and all of these other leaders who are trying to wade through this, because it's, I mean, it's a new story every day.
It is. And I you know, I'm not a big Donald Trump fan, but I keep thinking the G7 is going to become the G6 because we're just not relevant if all we are is a saboteur.
Right. I think one of the things that I saw that was interesting about NATO and his comments where he kind of blasted allies in public. But the things that I've read about the private meetings is they were very cordial, right? And they sat down and they talked about it. And with Merkel, he was like, oh, no, everything's great. And I'm not sure she would agree. But it's just really interesting, right, how he's got this persona. And now, I mean, I don't know if it's an act or if it's real, but that seems to be how he negotiates.
I'm
be
thinking.
Outlandish and outrageous. Mm-hmm. And can you come to the table? And maybe he won't get 4%, but maybe he'll get 3.
Yeah,
I think it's an act that's become real.
It's
at this
weird.
Point, because I think he's gotten his way a lot.
He does not follow political rules, right?
No,
and who
doesn't.
Knew there were rules, but found out when
he
broke them.
I'm going to use the term Trumpian, right? and I think we're going to, you know, in political history, we'll be saying that for decades. And the notion, you know, like you mentioned that he's one way public and another way private, but then there's another way to think of that is just wait a few minutes, a few days.
Right.
Both of those will have flipped.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I have this distinct memory, and before we go to break, but I have this distinct memory when President Trump was elected, I just had this thought, oh, he will stop tweeting. It was just, there was no way a president of the United States would be tweeting.
Yep.
And I remembered
at
with President Obama,
the
they didn't like that he had a phone, and they gave him a BlackBerry because it had more security on it than an iPhone or something.
Yep.
But what a transformational figure, because presidents from now on will always tweet.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's a new standard.
Yep.
It's crazy.
It's an odd use of Twitter, but it is a new standard, yes.
Yeah, and I think that it's broken down a barrier that we'll see. So, you know, you got to give them credit for that. Hey, I am here with Emily Hayes, the Salt Lake County Democratic Party first vice chair, sitting in for Jim DeBacchus, and Holly Richardson, a Salt Lake Tribune columnist and former state representative, sitting in for Dan McKay. In our next segment, we'll cover local news.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Hi, this is Holly Richardson on the right.
And Emily Hayes on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I mentioned we're going to go to local news, but I just want to take the opportunity, maybe it's just to celebrate the three of us, that these 12 boys from Thailand, the Wild Boars soccer team and their coach, safely recovered. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How closely did both of you follow this story?
Pretty closely.
Yeah. I was too. I mean, I had been following it since a couple weeks ago when they first went missing. And after about a week, I was like, all right, this is done. I mean, this is so sad. These kids are gone. And then was it last week they found them? And then ever since then, I've been pretty riveted.
That thought of the, I think it was two British scuba divers that found them. I haven't followed as closely, but the thought of them coming up from water and seeing them on a ledge or whatever.
Just imagine.
Holy cow. So Holly, you followed this closely.
Yeah. And one thing I thought, of course, is how those parents must have felt being separated from their children. And of course, that applies to other news today as well. But I heard, I read this really interesting commentary by a Thai rice farmer. She's a woman. She had a rice paddy very close to the caves, and they were pumping water out. It ended up being millions of gallons and destroying her crop. Mm. And the only comment she had was, "I can always regrow rice, but you cannot regrow a child." Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. Wow. But I mean, just kind of a side note, I couldn't even handle watching the videos because I could barely handle looking at the drawings. I'm like cave claustrophobic. I will never go spelunking.
Yeah.
And seeing what they had to go through to get them out was just, it's really amazing.
Yeah, real amazing. Well, let's go to some local news. This week we had Representative Mia Love and her former Democratic opponent, Doug Owens. They ran against each other twice in the 4th Congressional District, and they came together to launch a new Utah Outdoor Partners with the idea of increasing the understanding and the just awareness of how important our outdoors is to our economy. Did you guys see the coverage on this?
I did. And my only question, well, actually, I have several questions. But one of the questions I have is, what does Ben McAdams think of this? Because Doug Owens is partnering with in a project with Mia Love in an election year in a somewhat close race, and Doug Owens is helping her. But okay, thanks,
but Doug. But don't you find it refreshing in the sense, you know, that they're just getting about their business? I mean, I agree. There was that angle. But
I'll take it. And, you know, I talk a lot about wanting people to come together and stop being so divided by partisan lines that we can't even talk to each other anymore. So I do think it's great. And I also think it's great to step up and do something when outdoor retailers are like, okay, we're going to punish Utah, and Utahns are just saying, oh, look, we got it. We can take care of it ourselves.
Yeah. Emily, what do you see?
You know, I agree that it's a little strange that, Doug is partnering with Mia Love on this in an election year specifically. But I think it'll be interesting to see the outcome. I mean, the outdoor industry is such a huge thing here in Utah. I think it's something that everyone cares about in a lot of different aspects, whether that's, you know, tourism money, whether that's energy and mineral extraction, all of these different land use issues, I think, are really going to come to a head in the next couple of years, especially as we're dealing with planning and water use and all of these things. And so I hope that this is kind of a bipartisan approach that will bring us some, you know, solutions going forward. I know there's been a lot of pain, kind of especially for people on the left regarding, you know, land in Utah with the rescinding of Bears Ears and other changes like that. And so I'm hoping this might... I don't know. I'm optimistically hopeful that this will be some sort of a healing, but it'll be interesting to see what they come up with to go forward.
It definitely had the, you know, there's an angle that it politicized something. Maybe it would have been nice to have the entire congressional delegation and Doug Owens or something.
Well, I think it's great that a D is stepping up and saying, hey, we need to talk about this. Well, and I'm willing to work with Republicans, right? Because it has been very divisive.
Yeah, and at least it's not in October. Right. I mean, this is, you know, you still have to govern and you still have to do your thing. I did want to mention, so the Gardner Policy Institute, which I lead, we did some survey work for this. And it was interesting. We went to 50 business executives, did some qualitative research and asked them how important is the out-of-doors to business expansion, retention, your choice to be here. And it was the second most cited reason.
Yeah, wow. I would guess. Yeah.
And it deals with attracting the workforce and keeping a workforce.
It's one of the draws.
Yep. It's a big quality of life issue.
Yeah, really interesting. Yep. Okay, another political item. Let's go to the U.S. Senate race. This is kind of interesting. This gets to the whole debate thing.
Well, it's not really a race, but okay.
Okay. Well, you've got the sitting Salt Lake County Council Chair. Is that a way to say it? Councilwoman.
Councilwoman, yeah.
Yeah. Jenny Wilson, who has challenged Mitt Romney to a debate about immigration. And, of course, the Romney campaign has essentially said, we are happy to debate you through the sponsored debates of the Utah Debate Commission, but we're not going to do anything other than that.
Right.
Is this not a familiar story?
Where it's very familiar.
The challenger that doesn't have traction tries to get the opponent to come up, and they say the debate commission.
Right. Well, actually, the debate commission came up after the 2012 election cycle. That's when it was created. And so we did have incumbents who absolutely refused to debate in any format, anywhere, at any time. And so I actually like that there is a commission that says, hey, we're going to put these on, we're going to sponsor. They're legitimate. And, you know, one of the things I like about it is they really are nonpartisan. They're fair, right? It's not one side saying, I'm going to hold a gotcha debate where it's not really a debate, but everybody's going to be ganging up on the front runner. And that happened a little bit during the convention cycle, on the Republican side at least. So bless Jenny's heart. She's got some points that she wants to make, but she'll have an opportunity, I think, once with the one debate that they do with the debate commission. But she's not going to win this race.
Emily, stick up for your candidate.
So, you know, I mean, we all know the reality of being a Democratic statewide candidate in Utah. However, you know, I think it's great that Jenny's challenging Mitt to this debate. I think immigration is a huge issue right now, especially for the state of Utah. She's been doing great messaging on this. And frankly, Mitt said some pretty problematic things about immigrants in the last couple months. He said some negative things about DACA recipients and, kind of walked that back after he got a lot of pushback. And, you know, I don't think he's going to debate her. I don't think he has any interest or it's going to benefit him at all to do that. But I think it's great for her to push for that because, you know, I think we deserve to hear from the person who's going to be our senator, especially someone who, frankly, hasn't really been a part of this community. I mean, I know he's, you know, lives here and everything, but it'd be nice to hear from this person who's going to be representing us in D.C. about what his thoughts are, because if you're only doing one debate, there's only so much you can cover. And we're not going to get enough information about everything if you just kind of limit it to that one.
I'll just say from the political middle, one does not seem like enough to me. You know, for a U.S. Senate race, I would like two or three. I think, you know, much more than two or three is overboard, but I think one is not enough.
He had a debate in the primary.
Yeah, yeah.
I listened to it with Mike Kennedy.
I want to talk about another issue. I had to speak to the Salt Lake County Council this week about growth. And they're obviously smarting a little bit because of Olympia Hills. Mm-hmm. This is the development, you know, out near Harriman that has caused so much controversy. But it's really interesting to think about the challenge that our capital county faces right now when it's running out of land, but it's still the most, you know, the county with the best proximity to everything. What do you guys see happening? I know, Holly, you're a Pleasant Grove resident, so you're in ground zero of growth in this state.
I'm in Utah County, and I'm not far away from the point of the mountain, Traverse Mountain and Silicon Slopes. And there's it's really interesting. I mean, I know
is your
growth,
community changing right before your
is,
eyes?
It is. And when we moved to the house that we live in right now, it was a rural residential. It still is. But we have 1 acre. But we used to have fields all the way around us. And now it's just developments everywhere. And behind us, it stayed empty for a long time. And now they've got retirement homes going in on half acre lots. And, you know, here's this little house. It's actually not little, but it's old, right? It was originally built in the 70s. And when we bought it, it still was on a septic tank. And it's just has built up around us. And we have, in fact, I drove by today, a division today, where they have taken out all of the peach trees and they're putting in homes. Mm-hmm. And it just makes me sad because I love to eat peaches, right? But if we keep
orchards,
taking away farmland, orchards and stuff, we're going to be really, really landlocked. And I know growth is a really big issue in multiple ways, right? Because we have population growth that's coming. We've got people coming in. We've, of course, keep having babies. But we also have this issue of the homeless population and affordable housing. And we have just such a dramatic lack of affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And where does that fit into
this
the whole conversation?
One of these tough issues where what might be in your self-interest may not be in the community's interest.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing with like housing prices right now. So I'm at a point where, you know, my husband and I are kind of in the market looking for house. We're about maybe a year out of buying a house, but we're keeping our eye on the market. And it's kind of terrifying being a young person in Utah because prices are going up, which is great when you own a home, but when you're someone who's trying to buy into it, and we just want something small, like one or two bedrooms, probably a condo, and even that in the market is really, really hard to find something that's not over $400,000. And so I think we really need to be smart about how we develop this county. We need to be growing up. I know last week someone said we're either going to grow up or we're going to grow out, and I think we have to grow up.
Well, we're going
to
do both.
Yeah, we're going to. I mean, we're going to do
sound
both.
Sound like the political middle.
I think that we have to. We have to be. Like I know this was it Olympia Hills. Was that the name of the development that just got shot down? I think that I think that that's shown the amount that our local leaders need to change kind of their engagement strategy with growth, because, you know, we need political leaders who are going to make these hard decisions to say, yes, we need density, we need transit, we need all of these things, but they also need to be engaging the community so that all of a sudden they're not blindsided by these changes.
I want to ask both of you what policy change you'd like to see, and I'll start just so you can kind of be thinking about it. But, the issue always comes out. Is growth, does growth pay for itself? Mm-hmm. You know, is growth actually good for us? Mm-hmm. And I would say that it's much better than the alternative, decline.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
But growth requires investment. Mm-hmm. And so you must invest in transportation infrastructure, water infrastructure, and your quality of life, which is, land conservation and environmental protection. So in that sense, my policy change would be, I think we're going to have this 2019 legislative session. They're going to have a boatload of money. Mm-hmm. They're going to want to give a lot of it back to taxpayers. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell them, go invest that money. Mm-hmm. Protect the golden goose.
Right. I think a policy, I don't even know if it's a policy change, but a policy to adopt would be that local municipalities have some sort of coordinating plan and long-term plan. And not all communities are this way, but there are some communities that feel like they just fly by the seat of their pants, and a developer comes
in. So you'd like to see more thoughtful planning.
Can I put something there? Yeah, more thoughtful planning and more down the road. It's not what is happening in the next 2 to 5 years, but what's going to happen in 20 years, right? What is that going to look like? What's the population going to look like with schools,
et cetera? And another way to think of it is leadership.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how about you, Emily?
So one that's a little more kind of small scale than what you've brought up, but accessory dwelling units, which has been an issue in Salt. I've mostly been paying attention to it here in Salt Lake City proper, but
Can I just ask you the question, Emily? Are you one of those liberals that doesn't go past 21st South?
No. I've been to Harriman multiple times in the last
three you keep weeks. Going. Sorry to interrupt.
I mean, I live in Salt Lake, and, that's kind of where that's my home. I pay the most attention to, and I know that this has been an issue there. But accessory dwelling units are essentially, mother-in-law apartments, small homes on a property. And I know the Salt Lake City Council just passed an ordinance recently allowing a certain amount, but I think it was only like 150 a year, somewhere in that range. So not a whole lot. But this is something that could really help alleviate our our affordable housing issue and kind of get, I think, a lot of our homeless population into housing. Because these are, smaller units. They tend to be more affordable. They tend to be, not so upgraded. Mm-hmm. They're not these luxury condos, but they're things that then also supplement other people's mortgages. Mm-hmm. And so allowing things like this, there's a lot of fear, I think, in certain communities that, there's this phrase of, it threatens the character of our community. And it's like, it's just another family living in a house.
And think too, that the owners of those houses, a lot of times are the parents who raised their children. Now they're older. They don't have kids living at home. And yet we've got municipalities saying, oh, you can't let anybody come live there.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And sometimes it's family members who live there, whomever.
Sometimes,
but
sometimes not. And I get that. But sometimes
we need to go to gripes. But just as we do that, I'll just mention to you, and this is to our listeners as well, but if you have not gone out and seen the new Amazon Fulfillment Center, it's really a sight to see. Have you seen this?
No, I haven't.
So, I mean, I didn't know, but it's done.
I didn't know it was done.
Go to 5600 West and then just drive as far north as you can, and you will see a remarkable building.
Wow.
And in that same quadrant, if we use that term, you'll see a UPS distribution center, a Malto Mill, Post distribution center, a FedEx distribution center. Wow. It makes you realize why people are talking about inland ports.
So will that let Amazon deliver by drone to the Wasatch Front?
You got to think it's coming.
Okay. All right.
Holly, let's hear your gripe.
Okay. My gripe actually has to do with the Supreme Court nomination. And one of the people who was listed or named as being under consideration was Amy Barrett, a federal judge. And my gripe is that many of the news stories that talked about her nomination talked about the fact that she had 7 children. Now, I think all of the male nominees also had children, but I didn't hear anything about their families. But over and over and over for her, it was, oh my gosh, did you know she had 7 kids? Yes, we did. Thank you very much.
Very good. Emily, your gripe.
So my gripe is that the Thai soccer team that was rescued from the cave will not be the winners of the World Cup. I think that they should get honorary victory in that for what they've gone through.
You know, they were invited.
Were they?
Yeah,
oh,
so FIFA, in a way that FIFA can do, invited them to come to the World Cup final. This was a week or so ago before we knew. And they knew that they would not be in a physical condition to be there.
Wow.
But that would have been fun.
That would have been fun.
My gripe is similar in that I'm not going to gripe. I'm going to celebrate something. But we have Sunday, the match of the century between France and Croatia. And the reason it's the match of the century is that Croatia is a country of just a little over 4 million people.
Wow.
And they have made it to the World Cup final, the crown jewel of sporting planet-wise. Yeah, and if you may love France, but if you're rooting with your heart, you got to root for this country that's been through so much trouble, you know, and whatnot. So I'll be rooting for Croatia.
Awesome.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. You have been pleased to hear from Emily Hayes, the Salt Lake County Democratic Party first vice chair, and Holly Richardson, Salt Lake Tribune columnist and former state representative. I'm Natalie Gochner. The program's produced by Emily Means. Thanks for listening.